Hey, it's Steve Imke. In the fall of 2016, I had an opportunity to spend two nights with a class full of hobbyists that wanted to learn how to take a hobby that they love and turn it into a viable business. During those two nights, I took them on a journey of business entrepreneurship. I'm sorry you didn't make it, and I hope this is the next best thing. Here are excerpts from that live event. Hope you enjoy it. But even more important, I hope it inspires you to get off the couch and do something with it. Thanks for listening. So, four questions that you definitely need to ask yourself before you start, okay? And it'll come out, that piece will come out in the rest of the discussion here. So, do the customers recognize that they have a problem? And that's definitely a key part of that, all right? Because if they don't recognize that they have a problem, they're not going to go ahead and buy. If there was a solution, would they actually buy it from you? So if they don't have a problem, then they're never going to go ahead and search for the solution, right? If they do, would they buy it, like I said, from you versus from somebody else? And the last one there is, can we actually make the product in sufficient quantities? So what I tell people to do is, when the first thing you have to have is a challenge, or what we call the leap of faith assumptions. When we talk about that, it's not about... We all believe that we understand what the customer really wants, but it's always best to test it, to go out there and ask them. I would tell people that, has anybody heard of minimally viable products? So here's the thing, especially if, there are different kinds of people who buy products at different stages, all right? There's the, what I'll call the early adopters. The people who adopt the product, the early adopters, they want that bleeding edge, something that's brand new. That's what drives them, okay? They like to be that, they something absolutely new. They want to be the first person on the block that actually has that. To them, They care about the fact that it's new and those kind of things. That's what really drives them. But quite frankly, that's a very small percentage of it. When we get to some more of the mainstream adopters that actually adopt this particular program, there's a bit of a chasm that you have to cross, because now they're worried about stability and performance of that. Why do I even bother to say this? Because when we come out with a product, it's always good to be able to find those early adopters and give them something that's not working really well, because they'll give you feedback on what kinds of things that you would want to improve upon that. They're not the people who are looking for stability and performance. They're looking at even being part of the crafting of that particular idea, if that makes any sense to you. So we talk about coming out with a minimally viable product. And sometimes I've seen examples where what I call the three page website. And so what it is the very first page is a description of your product, and the very bottom of the page it has a buy now button. The second page is give me your credit card information, and the third page is temporarily out of stock message. Because what we're really trying to do is we're trying to ascertain whether people are willing to go ahead and exchange money for your idea. So let me give you an example here. Sometimes this is how I learned this particular lesson. I told you I was an oil and gas guy, but I had just developed some property on Chesapeake Bay. And so I had a wad of cash. I needed to either invest this in something new, or the government was going to take a big chunk of that. So I started investing in oil and gas. And so as I started to look into this, it, being a documentation and training guy, kind of a thing, I was like, I went to a trade show that they have in Houston, Texas once a year. 1,800 booths of oil and gas guys out there, exploration production companies, all trying to hawk their deal to the next person kind of coming in, right? They're either trying to sell it to a big oil company or sell it to an individual investors, or at some level kind of related to developing that oil resource. And so I went there with the idea of sitting there saying, listen, I'm going to develop a product, right? Because I would talk to the people that I had invested in. And I said, you know, talk to the sales guy. I said, well, what kind of things, you know, would speed up your process? And they say, you know what, here's the thing in the oil and gas industry. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's really generic, right? Like the basic geology of where you find oil, what's cap rocks, and, you know, where's a reservoir, and it's not this big pool of oil, and there's sandstones and limestones and how we do it, and fracking technologies and all that other kind of stuff. There's tax issues that are in there, like how do we figure out, you know, what's deductible this year over a long time, what's depreciable, what's, you know, what I can deduct the first year, those kind of things. How does it affect my alternative minimum taxes? And there's a bunch of documentation that I have to go through, disclosure documents and that kind of stuff. And the sales guys, they hate that part because it doesn't change from deal to deal. All they want to talk about is their sexy new drilling program that they have. Here's why we're going to drill here. Here's why this is the better thing than any other thing that you've got out there, and this is why you want to invest your money there. Okay? They don't want to talk about that same old stuff. So I said, great. I said, that's right in my wheelhouse. I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go take a year off. I'm going to go develop a course that teaches all this stuff. I said, if I did that, would you buy it? And to a person, yes, you build it, I will do it. Now, I didn't ask them for any money. I should have done that. But quite frankly, I went ahead. Now, I would have gone in there. The better way to do it, I'll describe that in a few minutes, would have been to take some of their money up front to build this product and then have them fund it. But I said, no, you know what? I sold my business not too long ago. I don't really work for money. This would be a fun thing for me to do. It would be a great thing. I'll do it on my nickel, and then I'll get ready to do it. A year later, I show up back down there again. I have a satchel full of DVDs, basically, and I say, I'm ready to license this thing to you. Remember, we sat here and talked last year, and I got my checkoff list, and I sit there and I go, so here it is, here's what the price tag is, and you know, here's the ROI on it, or ROI, and they're like, now's not a good time. And I'm like, really? What's changed between, you know, last year and the year? Well, you know, this or whatever. And I got all these things. So I went to the next booth, then the next booth, then the next booth, then the next booth, and I got pretty much the same message. So there's a whole lot of difference when somebody just says, if you build it, I will buy it, and somebody who's willing to exchange money. So that's why we talk about coming out with a minimally viable product. It may not even work. You put it out there, you see what it is. You actually want to find out what you want to measure. And you develop something, and then you send it out there and see how it kind of comes back to go off and do it. And sometimes it might just be that 3-page website that goes out there. So we line up all of our leap of faith assumptions, and then we go out there and we want to test them. So do people really want to buy that thing in that solar thing? Well, you know, we have to see if it's a viable thing. I mean, you could create a website to put it out there, see if it's in there. Now, it's probably not part of this course, but if you're interested, I can add a little things about crowdsourcing as a great opportunity to actually market something along that line. So, you know, so in a situation like that is you do pre-orders, basically, in a crowdsourcing campaign, and you set it up and say, here's what I got. And people go ahead, you do a little video maybe of how it works and a little description and so on and so forth, and you say, listen, I'm going to retail these for $30, but if you go ahead and contribute to my crowdsourcing campaign, you can have it for $25 or something like that. And so people say, this is really, I'm going to do that or whatever. Then when they exchange dollars for it, then now you have their dollars. When you finish that, you ultimately give them as part of the reward type of thing to go off and do that. Now, the biggest problem is, remember we talked about one of those things was, can I make it? So there's an interesting a documentary on there called The Makers. And it was talked about the 3D printer market. And so it talked about one of these companies. The name fails me for right now, but the company, when it was the largest crowdsourcing campaign, they needed to raise like $100,000 to build the molds, essentially, to build this little 3D printer that was going to go out there. They, I think, earned $2 or $3 million or something at the time. It was the largest crowdsourcing thing at the time. And, you know, I'll be honest, I mean, there was a documentary, right? So you saw them celebrating. I mean, they were going crazy. But then they couldn't source enough material to make all of those products in the time frame that they wanted to deliver them. I teach a crowdsourcing class, and there's a gentleman in town here who makes, his company's called TechWares. And so if you've ever seen any of his products, but basically he takes computer circuit boards and removes all the components and then makes ties and, you know, watches and, not watches, but, you know, bracelets and, you know, earrings and all kinds of things out of basically, you know, recycled. He calls it upcycling, right? Like kind of a thing. Upcycling. Yeah. And so So he went in there, and of course he met his goal on there. Now fortunately, he just barely met his goal, which really was probably almost the worst place for him to be, because that meant his stretch goal would have allowed him to hire somebody to build these for him, and he guaranteed that he would have them for Christmas last year. And so his deal was over about this time last year, and all of a sudden they said, great, he had committed to delivering, you know, like 100 ties, and he's like, wow, that means like 10 a day kind of a thing to him. And he was like working, you know, literally 20 hours a day from now until Christmas to try to produce those 20 ties. Because remember, it was a reward thing that he was using to go out and get it. So it didn't quite work out as good as he had really hoped. But at the end of the day, he definitely found out that people were willing to exchange dollars for the things that he had. So from that perspective, it was a very, very valuable thing. Thank you for listening to How to Turn My Hobby into a Full-Fledged Business. To learn more about Steve Emke, or to learn more about what it takes to own and operate a small business, please visit stevebizblog.com. That's stevebizblog.com. Or look for Steve's many books on various aspects of small business ownership at amazon.com or at stevebizblog.com.